Toward the distant gas giant around which the Cathal Republic's capital world of Dayark revolved.
"My guess is that they'll try their ion cannon next," she said. "Can we handle that?"
"Easily," Card assured her. "Certainly ion cannon that small. Here they come."
Breaking into pairs, the four Corsairs shot over and under the wild card, blasting away at full power with their ion cannon. Shada fired off a quick burst, catching one of them glancingly across the top quarter before both ships disappeared behind the wild card's bulk.
"Spotter?" she called.
"You took out his ion cannon," Chaul confirmed. "Balik, you've knocked out his rear deflector."
"They attack again,"
Hisishi's snarl cut him off. Shada glanced at the tactical and swung her turbolaser around toward where the nearest Corsair should appear. The attacker swung around the wild card's hull, its lasers blazing uselessly away at the freighter's thick armor. Shada and Balik fired back, the twin turbolaser blast catching him squarely across the bow and shattering him in a brilliant flash of light. And with a deafening thunderclap, something slammed straight through Shada's transparasteel bubble.
"I'm hit!"
Shada gasped, fighting against the sudden tearing pain in her right chest and shoulder. All around her, a cold wind whistled as the air rushed through the shattered bubble. Her right hand was useless. With her left hand, she dug at her restraints, wondering distantly if she would be able to get loose and out of the bay before the vacuum took her. Perhaps now, at last, it was all finally over. The wind was starting to diminish by the time she got the top restraint off. A bad sign. She shifted her hand to the lower strap, her vision starting to waver. And with a second thud, more felt than really heard, the bubble and stars vanished into a plate of gray metal. She blinked, but even as her oxygen-starved brain tried to figure it out, there was an ear-popping rush of air into the bay. And suddenly, strange hands were snapping off the last of her restraints.
"We've got her!"
a voice shouted uncomfortably loud in her ear.
"But she's been hit! Get Anna Whiskery down here fast!"
"Already here,"
a second voice came in from Shada's other side. There was a tingle of something in her arm. She came to slowly, or at least slowly for a Mistral. For a moment she remained lying quietly, her eyes closed as she assessed the situation and her own physical condition. Her right chest and arm felt vaguely numb, and her scalp itched like it always did after a session in a Bacta tank. But aside from that, she felt reasonably fine. From the soft sound of breathing, she could tell she wasn't alone. From the lack of background engine or machinery sounds, it seemed the wild card had made it through to Dayark. So it wasn't the end yet, and life remained before her. A pity. Taking a deep but quiet breath, she opened her eyes. She was lying on one of the three beds in the wild card's medical bay. Seated across the room, staring meditatively off into space, was Card.
"I take it we won?"
Shada asked. Card jerked slightly, his gaze coming back to her.
"Yes, we won quite handily," he said. "How are you feeling?"
"Not too bad," she said, moving her right arm experimentally.
Aside from some stiffness and the numbness she'd already noted, it didn't seem too bad, at least as long as she didn't try to move it too far in any direction.
"Arm needs a little more work."
"Yes. An Oiskri tells me you'll need at least one more session in the Bacta tank," Card said. "I had you pulled out so that you could accompany me on a short walk outside the ship. If you're interested, that is."
"Of course I'm interested," Shada said. "Where on Dayark are we?"
"The main spaceport of the capital city, Rytol Prime," Card said. "We put down about 2 hours ago."
Shada frowned.
"And you're just going out now? I thought we were in a hurry."
"We are," Card said. "But we had to play host first to a small group of inspectors. They spent over an hour going through the ship with a proverbial flat-edge sifter, ostensibly searching for contraband.
I hope you watch them closely.
Very closely, Card assured her. At any rate, they've gone now, and Pormful and O'Donnell are making arrangements to get the ship repaired. In the meantime, the Cathar Republic military commander would like to have a word with us.
About our attackers, no doubt.
No doubt, Card agreed. Perhaps focusing on how we managed to fight them off with so little damage. Shada lifted her eyebrows.
So little damage being a relative term, of course.
Card grimaced. I'm sorry about what happened, Shada.
Forget it,
Shada cut him off. Apologies always made her uncomfortable, even when they were sincere. Especially when they were sincere.
It was my idea, remember? So what's the plan?
I'm supposed to meet with a General Jutka at a Tapkaf just outside the spaceport, Card told her. They mostly speak basic here, but there's a fair-sized contingent of Ithorian colonists, too. So I thought we'd take 3PO along in case we run into translation problems.
Odd place for an official meeting,
Shada commented.
Sounds like they don't know whether they want to be associated with us or not.
I would say that reading is dead on target, Card agreed, eyeing her thoughtfully. Your grasp of politics is quite good, especially for a simple bodyguard.
I've never claimed to be simple,
Shada countered, swinging her legs over the side of the medic bed.
Give me 5 minutes to get changed, and we'll go see this general.
10 minutes later, the three of them were walking down the bustling street that bordered the spaceport, Card and Shada walking side by side, with the gold-colored protocol droid shuffling along nervously behind them.
The natives seem curious,
Shada commented in a quiet voice. Card nodded. He'd already noticed the surreptitious glances of the Ithorian passerby and the out-and-out stares of some of the human ones. Mara reported they were a wary but not particularly unfriendly people.
Nice to know,
Shada said.
Of course, that report is 6 years old now. Interesting outfits they're wearing. Those shimmery coats with all the random tufts of fur still on them?
It's Crosshide, Card identified it. Native animal to one of the worlds in the Cathar Republic. Comfortable and durable, and those bits of fur can be left on either randomly or in any variety of patterns. Mara told me Crosshide coats were just coming into style when she and Calrissian were here. I see it's bloomed into a full-blown fashion since then.
Probably because it makes for instant identification of strangers,
Shada said, catching hold of a pinch of her shipboard jumpsuit material.
Not much chance of us blending into any crowd with these on.
Definitely a grain of truth in that, Card agreed. This part of the galaxy has been largely left alone by outsiders, but they had some clashes with the Empire, and there have been a few attempts by the New Republic to bring it into line with current political thought.
A goal the natives aren't interested in?
Not really, Card said, looking around at the faded commercial signs flapping restlessly in the breeze. A few of them weren't basic, but most were laid out with Ithorian glyptographs or a flow and dot script he didn't recognize at all. 3PO, we're looking for a place called the Ithor Loman, he said, motioning the droid to his side. Do you see it anywhere?
Yes, Captain Card. It's right over there,
3PO said, lifting an arm to point at a blue sign labeled in Ithorian.
Reminds me of Bombasa's place on Pembroke,
Shada growled.
You know, Card, you might want to consider occasionally adding a few more people to these probe parties of yours.
You wouldn't consider that a slight on your combat skills?
I think I've adequately proved my combat skills, Shada countered. The point is that if you field enough people, you can sometimes keep a fight from starting in the first place.
Card nodded, suppressing a smile. I'll remember that. After you.
Considering the early morning hour, the TapCap seemed unusually well populated, with both Ithorian and human locals in their crosshide jackets, plus one or two obvious off-worlders like themselves.
Any idea which one General Jutka is?
Shada murmured.
I presume he'll be watching for us, Card said. If not...
He broke off, as a short, slender man with short hair and a dapper crosshide jacket rose from a nearby table and stepped up to them.
Ah, visitors,
he said cheerfully, his eyes sparkling with interest or bubbling good humor as he looked each of them up and down.
You must be the parties here to see General Jutka.
Yes, we are, Card said. And you?
Entu Nidan Iels, at your service,
he said, giving a short bow.
Call me Entuni.
Interesting name, Card said, eyeing him. That Entu part sounds rather like a droid designation.
Oddly enough, people do sometimes mistake me for a droid,
Entuni said, his eyes sparkling all the more.
I can't imagine why. If you'll follow me, I'll show you to the General's table.
He bounded off between the tables without waiting for an answer, his step as lively as his speech had been.
Curious little man,
3PO commented as they followed.
He does appear harmless, however.
Never trust appearances,
Shada warned him.
Personally, I don't think he fits in with this place at all.
We'll keep an eye on him, Card told her. That must be Jutka.
Entuni had stopped beside a table in the back, where a single heavyset man was seated with his back to the wall, nursing a single drink. Wearing the by now familiar crosshide jacket, he nevertheless seemed to Card to be vaguely uncomfortable in it.
That's a military man, all right,
Shada said, echoing Card's own thought as Entuni spoke briefly to the other.
You can tell he feels awkward being out of uniform.
Entuni stepped aside as the others came up gesturing brightly to the bulky man.
General Jutka, may I present our visitors?
He said, suddenly looking a bit crestfallen.
Ah, I'm sorry, I didn't get your names.
We didn't give them, Card said. You can call me Captain. This is my friend Shada and my translation droid, C-3PO.
The general muttered something in an unfamiliar language.
He says he wasn't expecting a full theatrical parade,
3PO translated helpfully.
In fact...
Enough! Jutka spat. Keep your droid shut up, or I'll shut him up for you.
Oh, my...
3PO gasped, taking a hasty step backward.
My apologies, General Jutka.
I said keep him shut up!
Jutka cut him off.
I don't want to have to say that again. Now sit down.
Certainly,
Card said, slotting into a chair at the General's side and glancing back at 3PO. Entuni had stepped to the droid's side and was talking soothingly to him in a low voice.
My mistake, General. I thought I was here for a conversation, not a series of threats.
I apologize if you got that impression,
Jutka said darkly, looking balefully up at Shada. She had ignored his invitation to sit down, moving instead around the other side of the table so that she was effectively standing over him. And for a moment, Card thought he was going to issue a flat-out order for her to sit. He apparently thought better of it and turned his glare back to Card.
Fact is that you're a troublemaker,
he said.
Troublemakers aren't welcome on my world.
I see,
Card said.
So in the Cathar Republic, coming under pirate attack is the mark of a troublemaker?
Jutka's eyes narrowed.
Don't push me, he warned. I know who you're flying for. Your ship's ID makes that perfectly clear. The last thing I want is to end up in the middle of some stupid war between Bombasa and Rakas.
Rakas?
Shada repeated, her tone that of someone who's just made a connection.
The Rodian?
Yes,
Jutka said, frowning up at her.
You mean you didn't?
No, we didn't know who our friends were out there, Card confirmed. Many thanks. You know this Ray Koss, Shada?
Only by reputation,
Shada told him.
He used to be a strike team leader with the Karzak Slavers Cooperative. Quite a good one, apparently. He was also rough, violent, and vicious, and he irritated practically everyone he worked with.
Card nodded, feeling his mouth go a little dry. A vicious slaver, now in Cardass's territory? How many other criminals, he wondered, had also just happened to drift to this corner of the galaxy? Interesting.
Also interesting that the General knew his name when even Bombassa didn't,
Shada added.
You good friends with him, General?
My job is to protect the Cathol Republic,
Jutka said, his tone vibrant with soft menace.
I have no such responsibility toward outsiders who come in unasked and meddle with matters that are none of their business.
Out of the corner of his eye, Card saw Shada's head turn fractionally as she gave the main part of the tap cap a quick survey.
Are you threatening me, General?
He asked mildly.
I'm delivering a warning,
Jutka said bluntly.
You've hurt Ray Koss, and he doesn't take kindly to that. He's got your ship marked, and as long as you're in his territory, he's gonna keep after you.
We have every intention of leaving his territory, Card assured him. After my errand is finished, of course.
Do as you wish,
Jutka said, grunting as he heaved his bulk out of his chair.
But I've given you fair warning. Don't forget that.
I won't, Card said. Thank you for your time. Jutka scowled once and marched across the tap calf. Pushing open the door, he strode out without a backward glance.
And this is where Cardass picked to retire to, huh?
Shada said, sitting down in the chair Jutka had just vacated.
Lovely.
Keep your voice down,
Card admonished, looking around the tap calf. No one seemed to be taking any particular interest in this corner of the room, but appearances meant nothing.
And I doubt retirement was ever in his plans.
Shada sent him a probing look.
You think Ray Koss is working for him?
Card nodded soberly.
I would say that's entirely possible.
He caught her eye movement and looked up as N2 Knee pulled up a chair to their table and sat down.
Did you have a nice chat with the General?
He asked brightly.
That's good. That's very good.
He hunched himself closer to the table.
I've been talking with your droid,
he said, dropping his voice conspiratorially.
He says you're looking for the fabled lost world of Exacron.
Card looked at 3PO.
3PO?
I'm sorry, sir,
the droid said, sounding miserable.
I didn't mean to give anything away. He asked if we were searching for Exacron, and I confirmed it without thinking. Please don't blame the droid,
Entuni said.
Your goal isn't a secret. At least, not to me. You're looking for George Cardass, aren't you?
Shada shot Card a look across the table.
3PO, why don't you go over to the bar and get us a couple of glasses of the local brew?
She suggested.
On your way, listen and see if you hear anyone talking in Rodian.
Yes, Mistress Shada.
The droid said, sounding relieved at the chance to get away.
Right away.
He shuffled off.
Very clever,
Entuni said, grinning at Shada.
You think any spotters Ray Koss may have planted in the crowd will talk Rodian to each other, eh? Very clever indeed.
Thank you,
Shada said, fixing him with a look that was just short of a glare.
You were telling us about George Cardass?
Yes.
N2 Knee shuffled himself even closer to the table.
You're right to look for him on Nexacron. That's where he is.
He lifted a finger warningly.
But Nexacron isn't easy to find. Most people in the Cathol Republic have never even heard of it. Most of those who have believe it to be a myth.
So I've heard, Card said, fighting against a sudden sense of dread. How could Entuni know why he was here? Unless, of course, he was working for Cardass. Tell me why it's so hard to find. Entuni smiled even more broadly.
You don't need me to tell you that. Ah, but perhaps your friend doesn't know,
he added, shifting his grin to Shada.
It's all the mini nebulae and gas offshoots, you see, coming off the Cathol Rift. All of that reflected light and radiation scrambles sensors and communications. Makes it terribly difficult to find anything at all. Searching the whole region could take you decades.
And you can save us all that trouble, I suppose?
Shada asked.
I can indeed, he said. I can take you to Nexacron, right to Cardass himself, if you like.
He looked back at Card.
But only if Captain Card wishes.
With a strong effort, Card kept his expression steady. So the little man knew his name, too. And what would this guidance cost us?
No cost, Entuni said. But no us, either. It would just be you and me.
Excuse me?
Shada said, lifting a finger.
Just you and him? What about the rest of us? You'd have to wait for us here,
Entuni told her.
No other way, I'm afraid. My ship can only carry two people.
How about if you ride with us and guide our ship in?
Card asked.
Oh, no,
Entuni said, looking shocked.
I couldn't possibly do that.
Why not?
Shada demanded.
Because Cardass doesn't want to see all of us?
Entuni blinked.
Did I ever say Cardass wanted to see any of you? I said no such thing.
Which wasn't the same thing as saying Cardass hadn't asked him to make the offer.
If I accept, Card said slowly, when would we need to leave?
Wait a second,
Shada put in before Entuni could answer.
What do you mean, if you accept? You don't want to go off alone with him.
Card grimaced. No, he most certainly didn't. But at some point he was going to have to face Cardass. And if this was the best way to protect his people while he did that...
Let me put it another way,
Shada said, glaring at Entuni.
I'm his bodyguard, and I'm not letting him go off alone. Not with you or anyone else. Clear?
Entuni held out his hands palm upward.
But...
He broke off as 3PO reappeared and set two heavy mugs of dark liquid onto the table.
Thank the Maker. The clientele of this place are most unpleasant.
Never mind the local color.
Shada cut him off.
Did you hear any Rodian?
As a matter of fact, I did,
the droid said, half turning and pointing toward one of the tables across near the bar.
Three human males at that table. Ah, yes, the ones now standing up.
Uh-oh,
Shada muttered, darting a glance at Entuni.
Come on, time to get out of here.
Don't bother,
a softly vicious voice said from behind Card. Slowly he turned around. Two tables away, three men were sitting facing them, and all three had their blasters drawn. Chapter 14.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Card looked back around. Behind Shada, the three thugs 3PO had just identified were striding between the tables toward them, blasters now in their hands as well. Across the rest of the Tapcalf, The usual drinkers and loungers were either staring in surprise or morbid anticipation, or else trying to beat a surreptitious retreat before the shooting started.
"I suppose it would be a waste of breath to say you have the wrong people," he said, turning back to face the men behind him.
"Now, go right ahead,"
the thug's spokesman said sarcastically as the three of them got to their feet and fanned out slightly to cover their targets.
"I always enjoy a good laugh in the morning. Hands on the table, please. So, did I catch the name right? Talon Card?"
"Yes, indeed,"
Entuni spoke up brightly before Card could answer.
"And this is Shada, and the protocol droid, C-3PO.
The spokesman impaled the little man with a glare.
"You with them?"
Entuni's eyes widened innocently.
"Me? Not really, sir."
"Then get out of here."
Entuni blinked, threw a quick look around at Shada and Card, and scrambled up from his seat.
"Do let me know, Captain Card, if you change your mind," he said.
He shot a quick smile at Card, another at the spokesman, then bounced his way toward the door. The spokesman watched him go, frowning, and as the little man pulled open the door, he turned back to face Card.
"Change your mind about what?"
he demanded, as the thud of the closing door echoed across the tap calf.
"He just made me an interesting offer," Card said, lifting his arms with conspicuous slowness and folding them across his chest.
The thugs, their full attention on him and Shada, had completely missed the fact that someone had come into the tap calf at the same moment Entuni left. If he could manage to keep all of their attention on him for just a few more seconds... And then someone across the room swore in astonishment. One of the thugs glanced around.
"Shri! Zorn!"
he barked. The spokesman spun around and froze, his mouth dropping open with shock. Silently, determinedly, Hisashi was striding toward them. It took Zorn another second to find his voice.
"What in the name of the rift is that?"
he breathed.
"She's a Togorian,"
Card supplied, throwing a surreptitious glance at Shada. Her eyes were darting back and forth between the suddenly inattentive thugs, clearly measuring distances and assessing possibilities. That could be trouble.
"Oh, and she's with me," he added.
Hisashi was still coming toward the semicircle of thugs, her mouth open far enough to show her fangs.
"Tell it to stop!"
Zorn snapped, his voice hitting a higher pitch as his blaster jerked around to point at the Togorian.
"You hear me? Tell it to stop or we'll shoot!"
"I wouldn't advise shooting a Togorian,"
Card admonished him mildly.
"It only makes them angry."
Zorn shot a look of disbelief toward him, and in that instant, Shada moved. Her left hand, resting casually near her mug, snatched it up, and with a quick flick of her forearm, she hurled the contents across the table squarely into Zern's face. He bellowed, throwing up his forearm, too late, to try to block the wave of liquid. A convulsive jerk the other direction, and Shada had hurled the mug itself with crushing force into the throat of one of the other thugs. She started to leap up, yelping under her breath, as Card grabbed her arm and held her firmly in her seat. There was the sputter of blaster fire and the sounds of bodies hitting the floor.
"Lower your weapon, Zorn,"
Card said quietly. Even to his own ears, his voice seemed a startling intrusion into the sudden taut silence filling the tap calf.
"Very slowly, very carefully."
Zorn gave his eyes one last swipe with his sleeve and blinked them open. And for the second time in half a minute, he appeared to be struck speechless as he stared at the scene around him in stunned disbelief. Disbelief at Card and Shada sitting unhurt at the table. Disbelief at the crumpled bodies of his men lying around him on the floor. Wisps of noxious smoke rising from the blaster wounds riddling their bodies. And disbelief at the four crosshide-clad men at various tables scattered around the tap calf, pointing blasters at him. Your blaster, Zern. Card prompted again, as the thug continued to gape, drops of Shada's drink dripping rhythmically off his chin. Shada stirred, but before she could move, Hasishi had stepped to Zern's side and engulfed the barrel of his blaster in one massive hand. He started almost as if seeing the Tagorian for the first time, as she twisted the weapon to point harmlessly at the ceiling. She raised her other hand and dug a claw delicately into the back of his wrist, and this time he finally let go. "Well done, everyone," Card said, getting to his feet as Hisishi stepped back, the blaster now reversed, ready in her hand. "Duncan?"
"Here."
The familiar voice came from a distinctly unfamiliar face as the other stood up at his table.
"Go give the bartender something to compensate for the mess," Card instructed him. "It's somewhat traditional in these cases."
He added to Zern as Duncan crossed toward the bar, digging into his pocket.
"Griv, stand by the door. Chol, Bolik, go front guard the way back to the ship."
"Right."
The other three headed for the door.
"You're cute. Real cute. But if you think this is gonna get you out from under Raykosh's hammer, you're crazy."
"If I were you, I'd worry more about what Ray Koss will do to you for losing your mob this way,"
Card countered.
"I'd also worry about getting out of here before Hisishi decides you're too dangerous to leave alive."
"I'll leave," Zern said darkly. "But you'll see me again, Card, just before you die."
With one final glare, he turned and stomped out of the tap calf.
"Well?"
Card said, turning back to Shada and holding out a hand to her. She didn't move.
"So you had backups in place all along?"
she said, looking up at him. There was something distinctly discomforting in her voice and face.
"I thought you said you wouldn't take that as an insult,"
Card reminded her carefully.
"They're in disguise," she said.
Slowly, Card lowered his hand to his side.
"They were all seen by the local inspectors who'd searched the ship earlier," he explained. "I had to assume some of the group were spies for the pirates and would be able to recognize them."
"And the Krosh hide outfits?"
"Mara brought them back from her trip here,"
Card said, starting to feel sweat breaking out on his forehead. Shada rose to her feet.
"And you didn't think,"
she said quietly,
"that I could be trusted with it?"
For a second, Card couldn't find his voice. The deep ache that had been in Shada's voice was so completely unexpected.
"No, that's not it," he said. "I didn't..."
But it was too late. She had already turned her back on him and was striding toward the door where Grib stood guard.
"Are the repairs finished yet?"
she asked. Grib shot a quick look over her shoulder at Card.
"Close enough,"
he said cautiously.
"Good,"
she said, stepping past him and pulling the door open.
"Looks clear,"
she announced.
"Let's get back to the ship."
Grib looked questioningly at Card again.
"Yes,"
he murmured, heading toward the door. The walk back to the wild card was very quiet. Shada had stripped off her jumpsuit and had just gotten into her robe when the cabin door call chimed.
"Who is it?"
she called.
"It's Card,"
the other's voice came distantly through the panel.
"May I come in?"
Shada sighed, wrapping her robe securely around her and knotting the waist sash. She had no particular desire to see him, especially right now. But she had committed herself to this trip, and she couldn't very well avoid the captain and still fulfill that commitment. Besides, the pain of his casual betrayal of her trust had mostly subsided. Enough, anyway.
"Come in,"
she called, tapping the release. The door slid open, and Card stepped inside.
"We've just made the jump to light speed,"
he told her, taking in her state of dress and dismissing it in a single glance. O'Donnell estimates 7 days to Exocron.
Good,
Shada said briskly.
I should be back to full combat capability by then. Speaking of which, if you'll excuse me, I'm on my way to the Bacta tank.
The Bacta can wait, Card said politely but firmly, gesturing her to a chair. I'd like to talk to you. She thought about refusing, but she was still committed to him and to this trip.
About what?
She said, sitting down, wondering if he was really insensitive enough to try concocting some feeble excuse about that tap-calf thing at this late date. But he surprised her.
Georges Cardas, of course,
he said, pulling another chair over to face her and sitting down.
It's time you heard the whole story.
Really?
She said, keeping her voice neutral. He'd only promised to tell her this story on the way into the Exocron system, which according to him was still a week away. Was this his way of trying to make amends for his earlier thoughtlessness? Not that it mattered. Too little too late. But at least she gets some useful information out of it.
Go on,
she said. His gaze drifted outward, as if to a time or place far away.
The story of Georges Cardas goes back about 60 years, he said, to the Clone Wars era and the chaos that it brought on the galaxy. There was a great need for smuggling during the conflict and afterward, of necessities as well as contraband, and a large number of organizations were hastily and rather haphazardly thrown together.
That was when the Hutts really hit their stride, wasn't it?
Shada asked, interest stirring in spite of herself. There was very little she knew about that period, and she'd always wanted to know more.
Many of them did, yes, Card said. Cardas was one of those who jumped into the business, and whether through skill or simple blind luck, wound up with one of the better organizations. Not one of the larger ones, but definitely one of the better ones. They'd been operating for about 15 years, when he was accidentally caught up in the middle of a big battle between some Bivashi Dark Jedi and, well, basically everyone else in that sector. According to Cardas's later story, one of the Dark Jedi commandeered his private ship and forced them to take off.
Shada shivered. That one she did know something about. A group of Mistral had been involved on the defensive side of that conflict. Some of those stories she'd heard as a child from the survivors had given her nightmares.
I'm surprised he came back able to tell any stories at all,
she said.
So was everyone else, Card said. The other 4 members of his crew never did return, in fact. But Cardas did.
He suddenly reappeared 2 months later, settled back into control of his organization, and to all appearances, life went back to normal.
But the appearances were wrong?
Very wrong, Card agreed soberly. It was quickly apparent to his inner circle that something serious had happened to him during those 2 months. He still had one of the best smuggling groups around, but suddenly he began pushing to make it one of the biggest as well. He would move systematically into the territories of smaller groups and either buy them, absorb them, or destroy them, taking over their roots and clientele. Unlike the Hutts and other groups, he went for overall coverage rather than concentrated brute force control, spreading himself thinly out all over rather than trying to dominate any specific systems or sectors. In a few years, he was already on his way to having something that could someday rival even Jabba's organization.
Didn't anyone try to stop him?
Shada asked.
I can't see the Hutts sitting by and letting him outflank them that way.
My dear Shada, everyone tried to stop him,
Card said darkly.
But he was almost literally unstoppable. Somewhere, somehow, he had developed a knack for guessing precisely what his opponents were planning against him. And he was often able to counter their attacks almost literally before they were launched.
Shada thought back to the dozens of missions she'd gone on for the Mistral, and the hours of painstaking research she'd had to put into learning her opponent's strengths and weaknesses, weapons and strategies, allies and opponents.
A handy talent, she murmured.
Extremely handy, Card agreed. But even as his organization grew, Cardass himself began to change. He became, I don't know, moody, perhaps, inclined to flashes of screaming rage over little things that shouldn't have bothered him at all, or brooding alone for hours on end over charts of the Empire. More significantly, perhaps, after years of vigorous youth, he seemed to be aging rapidly, much faster than one would have thought normal or likely. And then, one day, he got into his private ship, took off, and vanished. Shada frowned.
Vanished? You mean vanished?
I mean disappeared from the known galaxy, Card said. He didn't go near any of his people, didn't contact any of his chief lieutenants, and if he was ever seen again by any of his enemies, they never announced the fact.
When was this?
Shada asked. 20 years ago, Card said. At first, there wasn't too much concern. He'd gone off on occasional secret trips before. But after 3 months had gone by, and he still hadn't surfaced, his lieutenants began to talk about what they should do if he didn't come back.
Let me guess, Shada said. They wanted to hold a vote and see which of them would take over.
I don't think voting was the procedure any of them had in mind, Card said ruefully. In fact, the threat of violence was so thick that the suggestion was made that we simply split up the organization and each take a chunk.
The trick being how you divide it to everyone's satisfaction,
Shada said, noting the telltale word with interest. It was the first time in his recitation that Card had used the word we.
So you wound up with a power struggle anyway.
Card's lips pressed briefly together. Not exactly. I saw what would happen in that kind of struggle, and I wasn't totally convinced that Cardass wouldn't be coming back. So I took over.
Shada lifted her eyebrows slightly.
Just like that?
He shrugged uncomfortably. More or less. It took planning and timing, of course, and a fair amount of luck. Though I don't think I realized quite how much until I looked back on it from a distance of a few years. But yes, basically, just like that. I neutralized the other lieutenants and moved them out, and announced to the rest of the organization that it was henceforth to be business as usual.
I bet that made you very popular, Shada said. But I seem to be missing the problem here, at least as far as Cardass is concerned. He left and never came back, right?
The problem, Card said heavily, is that I'm not sure he didn't.
Shada felt her eyes narrow.
Oh?
I took over the organization in a single night, Card said. But that doesn't mean there weren't attempts by the ousted lieutenants and their cadres afterward to drive me out and take over themselves. There were 8 different attempts, in fact, ranging from 2 immediate and abortive tries to an intricate scheme 3 years later that had probably taken the conspirators that entire time to plan.
All of which failed, obviously.
Card nodded.
The point is that the leaders of 4 of those plots claimed during their interrogations that Cardass had been secretly behind them.
Shada snorted under her breath.
Smoke covers,
she said scornfully, dismissing them with a wave of her hand.
Just trying to rattle you into cutting a deal.
That was my conclusion at the time, Card said. But of course, there was no way for me to be sure. Still isn't, for that matter.
I suppose not.
Shada studied his face.
So what happened 6 years ago that made you send Jade and Calrissian out here to look for him?
It started further back than that, Card said. 10 years ago, actually. Just after Grand Admiral Thrawn died. His lip twitched. Or perhaps merely faked his death. I was on Coruscant, helping set up the Smuggler's Alliance, and Calrissian happened to show me something Luke Skywalker had found buried on a planet called Dagobah. Shada searched her memory.
I don't think I've ever heard of the place.
No reason you should have, Card said. There's absolutely nothing there. No cities, no technology, no colonies. What Skywalker wanted with the swamps, I don't know. But it was obvious that stray electronic devices were out of place, which is probably why he brought it back. At any rate, from the markings I recognized it as the beck and call from Cardass's personal ship.
Really?
Shada said, frowning. A beck and call was the control for a fully slave-rigged ship, one that could operate on complete remote control whenever its owner signaled for it. The Mistral never used full-rigged ships themselves, but she'd occasionally ridden on one with a client. Overall, they gave her the creeps.
Cardass had a full-rigged ship, did he?
Of pre-Clone Wars vintage, yes, Card said. He bought it soon after he returned from that bout with the Dark Jedi. Said he wanted a decently sized ship that he could fly alone, without the need for a crew.
And Skywalker just happened to find his beck and call lying in the mud on some deserted planet? How convenient.
That was my thought, too, Card said. But I checked with Skywalker, and the discovery seemed entirely fortuitous.
Though whether that word can be applied to Jedi has always been arguable,
Shada put in. True, Card conceded. Still, it was the first clue it had in a decade, and even if it was some kind of plant, I thought it was worth the risk of seeing where it led.
So you sent Jade to hunt him down?
Shada said, remembering the conversation she'd overheard back in the Solo's Orowood Tower apartment.
And Calrissian insisted on tagging along.
Basically, Card said. They started at Dagobah and worked their way outward, searching through old spaceport records for where he might have stopped off for repairs or refueling. They also dug up hints about him here and there, some from the Coruscant Library, some from various fringe characters, some from Corellian security, of all places, and started putting the pieces together.
Talk about your lifetime jobs,
Shada murmured. It wasn't quite that bad, but it did definitely take some years, Card said. Especially as they both kept getting dragged off on other business, or pulled in to help fix whatever Coruscant's crisis of the month was. Still, the trail was already so cold that a month or two here or there didn't make much of a difference. They kept at it until they wound up in Cathal's sector and Exocron. And there, as far as we can tell, the trail ends. For a moment, the room was silent, as Shada digested it all.
I take it they never actually saw Cardass himself?
With a visible effort, Card seemed to draw himself back from whatever ghosts of the past he was gazing at. They had explicit instructions not to, he said. They were to find out where he was, and with a world as well hidden as Exocron, they also needed to find a route into the place. And then they were to come home. I would take it from there.
And this was how long ago?
Card shrugged uncomfortably. A few years.
So what happened?
To be honest, I lost my nerve, he admitted. After what I'd done, I wasn't at all sure how I was going to face him. Had no idea what I was going to say. How I was going to even try to make amends. So I kept finding excuses to put it off. He took a deep breath. And now it looks like I'm too late. Shada grimaced.
You think Ray Koss is working for him?
Ray Koss, possibly Bombassa, probably a dozen others we haven't heard about, Card said heavily. But he's definitely on the move. Only this time, he seems to be concentrating on piracy and slaving, instead of smuggling and information brokering. The more violent edge of the fringe. And I can only see one reason why he would do that. To come after me, personally. For a moment, the word seemed to hang in the air like a death mark.
I don't think that necessarily follows, Shada said into the silence, moved by some obscure desire to argue the point. Why can't he just be building up a force to carve himself a little empire here in the backwater? Take over Exicron, maybe, or even this little so-called Cathal Republic.
He's been here for nearly 2 decades, Shada, Card reminded her. If he was into empire carving, don't you think he would have done it before now?
If he was into taking you out, don't you think he would have done that before now, too?
Shada countered. He may have already tried.
And then what? Given up after the first 3 years?
Card shook his head. He doesn't make sense to me either, he conceded. But I knew Cardass. And he wasn't the sort of person who could just sit around doing nothing. He was a ruthless man, hard and calculating, who never forgave a wrong against him, and never let anyone or anything stand in the way of what he wanted. And he lived for challenges. The bigger, the better. And he knows I'm here, and that I'm looking for him. That little man, N2Ni, is all the proof we need of that. An involuntary shiver ran through Shada. The wild card, which had felt so safe and secure up till now, suddenly felt small and very vulnerable.
And so here we are, walking straight into his hands.
You, at least, should have nothing to fear from him, Card assured her. You're not connected in any way with me or my organization. He hesitated. As a matter of fact, that's why I agreed to let you come along. Shada stared at him as understanding suddenly slapped her like an ice-soaked rag.
You're expecting him to kill you, aren't you?
She breathed.
And you think...
You're not associated with me, Shada, Card said quietly. Everyone else aboard this ship is. I would have come alone, but I knew I couldn't survive the trip to Exicron in anything smaller or less well-armed than the wild card. Cardass is a vengeful man. But like Bombassa, he likes to consider himself cultured. I hope to talk him out of killing me, of course. I hope even more that he won't harm my crew. But if he's adamant on settling old scores, I hope at least I can persuade him to let you go back to the New Republic with a copy of the Ka'amas document. Shada shook her head.
Card, this is insane.
At any rate, that's the whole story. He cut her off easily, standing up and swinging his chair back to where it had been. Oh, except for the fact that the huge data library Cardass had built up over the years vanished along with him, which is why we think he may have a copy of the Ka'amas document. And now, you do need to get to that Bacta tank. I'll see you later. With a nod, he left.
Card, this is insane,
Shada repeated again quietly to the empty room. It was only later, floating in the Bacta tank, that the other part of it occurred to her. Card was hoping, he had said, that Cardass would allow her to leave. But he wasn't guaranteeing it.
Chapter 15. Splitter of Stone said something in that irritating Quam Ja almost voice and fluttered to his usual upside-down perch on a stunted stalactite.
Great, Luke announced. We seem to be here.
Mara raised her glow rod beam from the ground in front of her and scanned the walls of the passageway. A hardly daring to believe the grueling four-day trip was finally over. Cities or starships or even a quiet encampment under the open sky, those were her milieus of choice. This business of grubbing around dark, dusty tunnels with grime and dripping water and dank air all around was emphatically not her cup of Elba. But she survived it, and she hadn't wanted to kill any of the Kwamja more than twice a day, and the astromech droid hadn't caused too many problems, and Skywalker had been unexpectedly congenial company. And now, they were finally here. Of course, from now on, they would be facing the High Tower, with all its unknown dangers. But that was all right. Danger was also one of her milieus of choice. One of Luke's, too, come to think of it.
There it is, Luke said.
His own searching glowrod beam settling on a patch of rock along the wall, a few meters ahead down the passageway.
Just this side of the archway. Archway?
Mara repeated, frowning as she turned her glowrod that direction. Surely someone hadn't actually built an archway down here in the middle of nowhere, had they? No. It looked rather like an archway, certainly, with its more or less vertical side pillars creating a 2-meter-wide bottleneck in the cavern passageway, and its mostly circular upper arch butting up against the ceiling 3 meters above. But anything more than a cursory glance showed instantly that it was a natural formation, created by some trick of erosion or rock intrusion or long-gone water flow.
It was a figure of speech,
Luke said, shifting his light to the formation, too.
Sort of brings to mind that archway on Hilliard City on Merkur, doesn't it? You mean the big mushroom-shaped thing you did your best to drop on us?
She countered.
The one we had to grind our way through 3 days' worth of forest to get to? The one where half the stormtroopers in the Empire were sitting around waiting for us to show up?
That's the place, he said, and she could sense his amusement at her recitation.
You left out where you wanted to kill me more than anything else in the galaxy. I was young then,
Mara said briefly, shifting her light away.
So where's this opening?
Right there,
Luke said, returning his glowrod beam to a crumpled-looking section of wall just below the ceiling. In the center of the light was a small open area that seemed to vanish into the darkness beyond.
I see it,
Mara said. There didn't seem to be any air coming from it. There must be some other blockage farther down the line.
Looks cozy.
Not for long, Luke said, handing her his glow rod and igniting his lightsaber. Everyone, stay back. This'll probably throw rock chips around. He swung the blade into the wall, slicing into the stone. And with a sputter of green light, the blade vanished. R2 screeched, and Mara caught the flash of astonishment from Luke as he stumbled briefly before catching his balance.
What happened?
She demanded.
I don't know,
he said, holding the weapon up close and looking obliquely into the end.
I thought I had it locked on. Let me try it again.
He touched the switch, and with its usual snap hiss, the blade blazed into existence again. Luke watched it for a moment, then settled into a stable combat stance, and again swung the tip of the blade into the rock wall.
And once again, the blade cut only a little ways into the rock before sputtering away.
One of the Kwamja fluttered his wings and said something.
Yes,
Luke said, and Mara could feel the sudden ugly suspicion in his mind as distant memories drifted up.
Yes, what?
Mara demanded.
There must be Cortosis ore in this rock,
he told her. He held his glow rod up to the rock face, the light dancing off tiny sparkles.
Never heard of it.
It's apparently fairly rare, Luke said.
All I really know about it is that it shuts down lightsabers.
Corrin and I ran into some force users once who made sets of body armor out of woven Cortosis fibers. It was quite a surprise.
I'll bet,
Mara said, a memory of her own drifting up.
So that's what the slab of rock was Palpatine had between the double walls of his private residence.
Luke lifted an eyebrow.
He had Cortosis ore around his residence? And around some of his other offices and throne rooms, too, I think, Mara said. I never knew the proper name for the stuff. From what he told me, I gather that if your lightsaber has Demetris circuits anywhere in the activation loop, hitting the rock starts a feedback crash running through the system that takes only a fraction of a second to shut the whole thing down. A little something extra to slow down any stray Jedi who might come after him.
The things you learn as Emperor's hand, Luke murmured. Do you know if there's any way to cut it?
Oh, sure. Hundreds of them,
Mara assured him, slipping her pack onto the ground.
Aside from the lightsaber thing, the stuff's basically useless. It's too weak and crumbly to build with. A good blaster carbine bolt will shatter it. Let me see. Ah.
She pulled out one of the grenades Card had sent and shined her glow rod on the yield number.
Yes. This ought to work if you want to try it.
One of the Quam Ja put in another comment.
Keeper of Promises thinks grenades would be a bad idea,
Luke translated.
He says we're not that far from the High Tower itself, and that sound carries pretty far underground. He's probably right,
Mara conceded, putting the grenade away and studying the rock where Luke had been cutting.
On the other hand, you're only getting a few centimeters at a time this way. Extra noise or extra delay? Your pick.
Luke ran a hand thoughtfully across the rock, and Mara could sense his concentration as he stretched out to the Force.
Let's try it with lightsabers for a while, he suggested slowly. At least a couple of hours.
That should give us a better estimate of how long it's actually going to take.
Fine, Mara said. We can always switch to the grenades if we decide it's going too slow.
She played her glow rod over the rock.
So along with caverns full of predators, we now have a wall that blocks lightsabers. How convenient for someone.
It could be just coincidence, Luke said, but he didn't sound like he believed it.
Well, there's nothing for it but to get started. He frowned suddenly.
Unless you think this might damage the lightsabers. Mara shrugged.
I can't see how it would, but I really don't know. Hopefully we'll be able to pick up any trouble before it gets too bad.
True, Luke agreed, looking down at his astromech droid.
R2, full sensors, and keep an eye on the lightsabers. Let us know if they seem to be overheating or anything.
The droid beeped acknowledgement and extended his little sensor unit.
We probably should start this as a triangle,
Mara suggested, crossing the passageway and wedging her glow rod into a crevice where it would illuminate the area beneath the Quam Ja sneak hole.
Carving down at an angle on opposite sides. That should keep our blades out of each other's way. And angled cuts are usually better at weakening the underlying rock.
Sounds good. Luke looked up at the three Quam Ja grouped close together on the ceiling.
Splitter of Stones, why don't you head back to Eater of Fire Creepers? Tell him we're almost ready for the extra scouts he promised to send into the High Tower with us.
The Quam Ja said something.
No, but we will be soon,
Luke said.
And you'd better take one of the others with you.
Sitting on a lump of stone beneath the archway, Child of Winds flapped his wings and said something that sounded eager.
No, not you,
Luke told the Quam Kwe firmly.
Keeper of Promises, you go with him.
There was a brief comment from the Quam Ja that sounded vaguely condescending, and then Splitter of Stones and Keeper of Promises dropped off their perches and flapped off back into the darkness toward the cave entrance. Child of Winds fired off a sarcastic-sounding shot as they left, then settled huffily back onto his rock.
I'll bet I'm missing some really witty repartee here,
Mara said sourly, pulling her lightsaber from her belt and taking up position to the left of the cut Luke had started.
Not really,
Luke said, igniting his lightsaber and moving to the opposite side.
You ready?
Mara ignited her lightsaber.
Let's do it.
They'd been at it for nearly an hour and had completed the outline for their opening.
Then R2 suddenly squealed.
Hold it, Mara. Luke called, closing down his lightsaber and wondering briefly what was wrong. He'd been concentrating closely on the weapon and hadn't felt even a hint of any problem with it. He glanced over at R2 and paused for a closer look. The droid's sensor unit was extended, but it wasn't aimed at the lightsabers. It was instead pointed down the passageway ahead.
Mara,
he called, shifting the weapon to his left hand and pulling out his glow rod. He played it down the tunnel as, behind him, Mara shut down her lightsaber. And in the sudden silence, he heard a noise. A rustling sound. Like thousands of distant, throaty voices whispering wordlessly to each other. A mindless rumbling that was echoed in his mind as he stretched out toward it with the Force. And it was getting closer.
I don't like the sound of that,
Mara murmured, stepping to his side.
Me neither, Luke said,
keying his glow rod to its brightest setting and sweeping it around again. Nothing was visible, but the way the tunnel twisted and bent in both directions, that didn't mean much. He ran through his Jedi sense enhancement techniques.
Fire creepers!
Builder with Vines said excitedly from the ceiling behind him.
They are coming!
What?
Mara demanded.
He said fire creepers are coming,
Luke relayed.
Uh-oh, Mara said. They're Bargainer's name, Eater of Fire Creepers.
Yes, Luke said, looking up at the Quamsha. His wings were fluttering with some kind of anticipation.
I've been assuming a fire creeper was some sort of plant. Builder with Vines, what are these things?
They are small but dangerous creatures,
the Quamsha said.
They will eat and destroy all things in their path and can kill anything they find.
He says small but dangerous,
Luke told Mara, sweeping the glow rod down the tunnel again.
In which case that much noise implies there must be one blazing lot of them on the way,
Mara concluded grimly, looking around.
I get the very bad feeling we're about to meet a new species of Rovereens.
Luke shivered. He'd seen holovids of those infamous insect predators on their annual march across the Deverian jungles. Rovereens traveled in swarms of hundreds of thousands, sometimes even millions, literally stripping the landscape of every bit of plant life as they passed over it. Plant life and any animals that were too slow or too sick to get out of their way, eating such stragglers down to polished bone.
Builder with Vines, how fast do they travel?
He called.
Too fast,
Mara snapped before the Quamsha could answer.
Look, here they come.
Luke caught his breath. Ahead, just at the farthest spot the glow rod beam could reach, the front edge of a pulsating sheet of black had appeared, filling the entire floor and spilling perhaps a meter up the walls as well. Even as he watched, the edge flowed like some viscous liquid into a slight dip in the floor, reappearing as it flowed up again over the lip. And Mara was right. They were coming far too fast.
I'd say we've got maybe a minute before they get here,
Mara said.
If you've got any clever tricks up your sleeve, this is the time to trot them out.